Later this month, on June 29th, the third installment of an ongoing collaboration between legendary rock musician and songwriter Neil Young and Academy Award-winning filmmaker Jonathan Demme will open here in New York. Mr. Demme's film, Neil Young Journeys, captures the singer at Toronto's famed Massey Hall on the last two nights of his 2011 solo tour. And interspersed is footage of Neil driving the streets of his boyhood home in North Ontario, reliving memories and telling the story of his journey through the past. And just this past Tuesday, Neil Young, along with his longtime band Crazy Horse, released a new album called Americana. We just heard Clementine from that. They've announced tour dates, which will begin in early August. And all of that brings Neil Young and Jonathan Demme to our studio today. Hello.
Hi.
You two must know each other pretty well by now. How many times have you worked together at this point? This is the third film, right?
It's the third full-length film, and we did a half-hour performance film years ago called The Complex Sessions, and I was lucky enough to have Neil write and sing the song for Philadelphia, and even in Rachel Getting Married, Tunde Adebimpe sings one of Neil's songs to his bride when he's getting married. Thanks again for that one, Neil.
So you're welcome. So is it the film or the music that brought you together? Because, Neil, you have a deep interest in film as well.
It's actually just the art, I think, in the time. Just the people.
Well, the people also include another wonderful filmmaker, Jim Jarmusch.
Absolutely.
And you've made films yourself. So did the filmmaking come along later in your life, or had you always wanted to do that as well?
Well, film started off for me as a relief from music. So I played a lot of music and you can drive something into the ground. So I decided that at one point that I just would start following the film side of things. So around 1969 or something like that, I started doing a lot of filming.
Has your musical career gotten in the way of your desire to make movies?
Not really, no. It doesn't. I kind of do both, when I feel like one and I abandon the other.
Although you do the filmmaking under the name Bernard Shakey, wouldn't the name Neil Young have enough cachet?
Well, I don't know. I'm not sure. Bernard Shakey is, pretty particular about who he works with.
I see. Well, is the name Shakey because we can expect the camera movements to not be all that steady?
I don't think so. No, I don't. I think it's more personal than that. I think it's the guy himself is shaky.
I see. The filmmaker is shaky.
Yeah.
Well, Jonathan, a lot of filmmakers could be called shaky, couldn't they?
Well, I suppose so. But, Bernard Shakey is one of my favorite filmmakers. And Greendale, which is previously, I think, the most recent Bernard Shakey until a brand new one, which is just finished. Greendale is one of my favorite films. I loved it when it was a opera or whatever you call it, live, and then it became this amazing film. And the thing, Leonard, is that Bernard Shakey is an entity unto himself. It's really not Neil Young.
You become a different person.
Who, me?
Yeah.
I was just listening to you guys. No, I try to stay right here.
Now, Jonathan, when you made... Moving right along.
Yeah.
When you made your first concert film with Neil, did you have any idea that you'd be making more and more over the years?
No. That was an all-consuming, amazing moment in life when we kind of teamed up and dreamt up Neil Young, Heart of Gold, and it was just an end to itself, and it was a great, great, great experience. And the next film we did together was Neil Young Trunk Show, and that happened really because the tour that Neil did was just extremely cinematic, as everything this man does is kind of very, very cinematic. He's like living cinematic ectoplasm or something like that. So that show had to be filmed. And the tour that we filmed for Neil Young Journeys had to be filmed. This unprecedented one man on stage creating all the sound and telling these amazing stories. evoking all these emotions. And, you know, so each one kind of has arisen by itself.
A couple of the songs in the film include extreme close-ups of Neil because you felt that would get across the kind of intensity that we experience when he's performing?
The reason in the first place for that super tight close-up is that Declan Quinn, our great director of photography, wanted to do a close-up that was inside the microphone. Because you, in normal close-ups, you know, they're singing into the mic and the camera can get just so close. So Declan took one of these tiny, what they call icon cameras, and attached it to the mic stand. It drifted down a little bit and wound up, you know, serendipitously, as far as I'm concerned, focused on, well, Neil's mouth more than anything, that the portal through which the voice and the stories emerge. And we used it in two very specific places.
When you see yourself performing like that, that close-up on screen, Neil, does it make you wonder about how your performances later?
I felt like I was part of technological cinema history at that point. You know, Jonathan is pioneering the spit cam, which I don't think anyone had ever seen before. And it's the kind of thing, while you're on the spit cam, you have to keep moving. You move out of the way sometimes, but if you dodge most of what does, you know, what does happen is if you don't move, something might get you.
But there's a smudge on the second song that we see that close up. Is that the mic or is that?
No, the smudge is actually a bead of saliva.
So
that landed
true
on the lens.
Spit jam.
Yeah.
Does it matter when you're working out strategies for filming a particular song, whether you're filming a performance of something that everybody knows or one of the newest songs from his recent record, Lenoir's?
You mean in the way to film it?
Yeah.
Well, you know, we position our cameras in what we consider to be will be the maximum angles, because our goal is to somehow get inside Neil and his music and come up with the cinematic equivalent of what he's trying to do with the stories he's telling and the music he's creating. So in the cutting room, now we start deploying the shots. We don't cut any two songs the same way. Every song has different angles. We change the angles from song to song while we're filming.
And another song is shot through the portal of the piano.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you most of the songs are performed on guitar, but there are a couple on piano, one on organ, and you wanted to get across the sense that there's a different visual to them as well as a different musical sound.
Definitely. We didn't want to repeat the imagery. But there's another thing, too, which is, like we always say, there's nothing can compete with live performance. Being in the room with the artist, creating the music in the moment, is unbeatable. So if we try to compete with that, what can we do to kind of justify a secondary performance? Well, in this instance, we can go right on stage with Neil Young, and we can hopefully evoke the feeling both of what it's like to be with Neil Young there, and even what's it like to be Neil Young in the middle of this situation.
My guests are Jonathan Demme, who is the director of Neil Young Journeys, which is opening in New York on June 29th, and Neil Young, the subject of the film. And Neil, how, after 42 years since the killing of four students at Kent State, do you summon the intensity to sing that song? Because it becomes just as immediate now as it did when it followed those tragic events.
Well, you know, any performance is a kind of a victim of the moment that it's in. And so whatever that moment has to offer, it's in control. So a lot of times I sing the song and I try to give it the best that I have. Other times I won't sing it because I don't think it serves the song to sing it. But every once in a while, the point when the moment when you're singing the song and the content of the song are completely harmonious. And that's always an accident. So you have to watch out for that. And then when that happens, you have to try to live it.
Hmm. Well, to some degree, you're saying you're also become an actor while you're performing.
Actually, No, actually, you become the song.
The same way an actor becomes the person that he or she is performing.
I guess that I think that's different. I think the song occupies you in a way that is different from acting. And a true actor, which I am not, would probably differ or may not. I don't know about that. But I do know that there's many ways that I can sing the song, but if the song and the moment come together and everything is right, then the moment takes over the song and you're just along for the ride. And it's not about doing anything. It's just about being there and keeping going and then let everything else work. It's the way it should.
So have you found yourself performing something you've been doing for many years and wondering why you're doing it in the middle of the performance? I mean, do you ever... I've always wondered about the people who sing their greatest hits all the time, and at a certain point, does it having any real personal significance?
Well, you have to watch out for that, and when that starts happening, if you respect the songs and you respect the muse, you move on to something new and you do something else. But in that particular version of Ohio, I found myself able to visit many of the people who were there and many of the characters who were actually the souls who were involved in the moment. And that is why repeating the same phrase over and over again seems to be different every time, because it's always a different soul. So that's what happens. But it doesn't happen all the time. Then it doesn't mean that it's a bad version of the song if it doesn't happen. You don't expect that to happen all the time. But we were lucky because we were there, and that's what happened.
In the film, the song is accompanied by footage from that day on the campus on Kent State, along with photos and the names of the victims in blood red. Now, you were performing it for a younger Canadian audience who might know the song but not understand the significance of it.
I don't think that's paying true tribute to the Canadian audience. I think that they're totally aware of that. I think that's not right. That they're just as aware of it as any American audience, because they were students at the same time. Had troops in the same wars. They were demonstrating in Canada at the same time as they were demonstrating down here. So I think that there is no international line of concern among the students.
My guests are Neil Young, subject of Jonathan Demme's new film, Neil Young Journeys, which opens in New York on June 29th. We will continue our conversation after we take a little break. Stay with us.
Dream, comfort, memory, despair. And in my mind, I still need a place to go. All my changes were there. Said a lot of things that I can't take back. I don't really know if I wanna. And songs about love, I sang songs about war since the back streets of Toronto. I sang for justice and I hit a bad chord, but I still try to sing about love and war.
We're back with Neil Young and Jonathan Demme talking about a new film called Neil Young Journeys, a concert film, which will be opening later this month, in fact, on June 29th. Many of the songs have these biographical details. How much of your songwriting actually grows out of thinking about what's going on in your life?
Well, I think that most of my songs have something to do either directly or indirectly, probably every song.
So you don't just sit down and say, I'm going to write a song about love or a breakup
or
something.
I try to not sit down and write. I try to wait till I feel like writing and then stop whatever else I'm doing and then write.
I was thinking about the intensity of sound that comes from your guitar in this film. On Down by the River, I could have sworn that your guitar was also producing the sounds of a vocal chorus and a drum kit at the same time. And I was watching your hands, and you just seemed to do it so effortlessly. Has it always been that easy?
No, I don't think so. But, you know, what happens is the imagination is huge. In the absence of these things, you hear them because they're always there. And then when people are not used to hearing just an electric guitar. So when they hear just an electric guitar, it's kind of like that movie, The Fantastic Voyage, you know. You're now, you know, like a piece of dirt on the E string, you know, you're way inside the guitar. So, and when that string starts vibrating, you're really getting the hell shaked out of yourself. And you know, so that's how close you are. So you hear all of these things that aren't there.
And you're saying that I'm hearing them.
Yeah,
but you must be aware that you're producing them.
Well, I'm more aware of being in the song and of just playing the guitar and letting the guitar sing and do this. Whatever it does, it's kind of like its own thing. You know, mm-hmm. The guitar really plays itself, and you just have to give it the kind of steer it.
Well, I want that kind of guitar because when I play the guitar, it doesn't play itself, at least not that well.
It's playing with its amp. It has got an amplifier that it likes. It's got the right strings. It's got, you know, it's got its memory. It has a lot of things that make it sound like that.
Do you like working as a solo act, or do you sometimes miss the security of having a backup musicians that you can lean on and interact with?
They're different things. I like them both. It just depends on the moment. Sometimes you're in the moment and it's the right thing to be doing. Sometimes you wish you had the other situation, but you can't control it because you have to make a decision in advance.
Well, after the tour, you went into the studio with Crazy Horse and did this new album.
Yeah, but that was like a year after the tour.
And did it feel? It must have felt very different.
It felt fantastic. It was like unbelievably great.
Well, you've filmed concerts with Crazy Horse and solo as well. I'd imagine that filming a concert that has a lot of musicians is a lot easier because you have so many different places you can go to.
That's something you haven't done, Jonathan.
Well, you know, it's in regards to our three films, one of the cornerstones of Neil Young Heart of Gold and then subsequently Neil Young Trunk Show was, you know, we've got something, you know, one of the things on our menu here that people are going to enjoy is seeing the relationship between the musicians, Neil and all the musicians. We put the cameras up in such a way as to capture what's going on between them. So in the abstract, I thought that now that we're doing a film that's quote-unquote only Neil, that's challenging because we don't have anyone else to cut to, and we don't have any interaction. But I think what happened was, that night anyway, up at Massey Hall at the end of the tour, I think that deprived of other people to play with and to look at, all of Neil's energy, all of his heart and soul went into the stories he was telling. And I think that that's one of the reasons we have a particularly heightened performance.
You mentioned that you also filmed Neil driving a vintage 1956 Ford Crown Victoria from his hometown in Amamie, Ontario, and reminiscing about his childhood. But you filmed this in Massey Hall, which will always have a legendary status for jazz fans because it's where what some people have called the greatest jazz concert of all times was held and recorded. Charlie Parker, Dizzy Gillespie, yeah. Bud Powell, Charles Mingus, Max Roach. Is this a place that has good acoustics for a filmmaker?
Well, amazing sounding hall. Massey Hall and Constitution Hall in Washington, D.C. are basically the same acoustic form, where the stage is in the venue and the walls are behind you. So you're in the room instead of back in a box. Mm. Mm-hmm. With people looking at you, and so acoustically, it's superb. There's no there. You know, if you're going to get something, chances are you're going to get it in a place like that.
And when you're performing there, are you aware of the history in the same way that you might be if you're performing at the Grand Ole Opry?
If you're really performing at your peak, you don't know where you are. you're just happy to be going there when you realize that's where I'm going to be to try to lose myself.
You tell stories of sleeping in your backyard in a pup tent all summer to be closer to your chickens in the film. Your
father, nothing has changed.
Your father was a well-known writer. What were you doing with chickens in the backyard?
Oh, I was trying to make some money. I've always been enterprising.
And you also reveal you're a bit naive at times. That kid across the street convinced you to eat road tar.
Well, he gave me a quarter. Maybe it was only 5 cents, but I thought it was a quarter.
Is that Canadian money wasn't at that time wasn't worth the same as a quarter was worth here.
But to a Canadian, it was worth just as much.
How long before you had how far back had you been to Omimi before? Do you visit it regularly?
That's Omimi. That's
Omimi.
An Indian word for muddy waters.
Hmm. Oh well, we're gonna have Buddy Guy on later, so we'll be talking about muddy waters.
So what was the question again? I got distracted.
Have you been back a lot? Is your brother still living there?
Yes, he's still up there, and I do go back a lot, and I love to visit there. And, you know, my family came from there, and we had a lot of good times around that place. And so, yes, I like to go back there.
Now, we mentioned the new album. In fact, we played Clementine from it. It's a recording of classic songs like O Susanna, This Land Is Your Land. You're calling it Americana. Is Get a Job on the album also?
Yes.
So that seems to be one of the exceptions.
Well, that's not an exception. I mean, that's Americana if anything is. Don't you think? Get a job. Hello. Here we are. Mm-hmm. Please get a job.
Mm-hmm. Well, now
I'm not going to be president anymore.
It has a special significance today, right?
Yeah. So those those songs came from... I'm writing a book, and I was writing this book, and I was thinking about back in 1964 when I was playing with my band, The Squires, in this folk coffee house back in Thunder Bay, Ontario, and this band came through called The Thorns with Tim Rose in it, and they played Oh Susanna, and I went, oh, my God, that's a fantastic arrangement of that song. I couldn't believe it. So I copied it and showed it to my band, and then it was the people liked it so much. I did similar arrangements based on that approach to Clementine and She'll Be Coming Around the Mountain and Tom Dooley and all these songs and everything. And then I was recording with Crazy Horse as I was writing this book that I remembered this in, and I didn't have any new songs, so I just started recording these songs with Crazy Horse because I'd never recorded them before. It was an accident the way it started.
Are they as much a song like This Land Is Your Land, as much of the Canadian repertoire as they are of the repertoire here?
Because
I've always thought about this interaction between American music and Canadian music. Hank Snow, one of the legendary country singers, is Canadian. And in fact, country music has always been...
It's huge
Appalachian
in Canada.
And Canada,
yeah,
Canadian.
Yeah, right, there's really no musical border, it's all the same thing. It's just North American, really.
Every once in a while, I hear Duane Eddy in your low notes. I don't know if he's there for you.
He's cool. I spoke to Duane about it 2 months ago. I was playing him a high resolution music system, and it blew his mind. And he was, he's still very aware of what's going on and very much an active musician.
You've had hits in every decade since the beginning of your career. Today, a hit means something different than it did in the past. How are you adjusting to the takeover of the music business by the internet?
Well, the content providers, they're doing a terrible job. They're supplying you and I and everybody who's listening to this with 5% of the sound that the artist is making. And so music is taking a terrible hit because you can't hear it.
Now, you filmed this, Jonathan, in regular film, or did you do it in digital?
Digital, yeah. We haven't used regular film for a while.
Well, some people still insist on doing it. Do you still get all the sound that you would want?
Oh, yeah. Well, certainly. And in fact, we recorded the music for Neil Young Journeys in a information storing way that has never been done before for a movie, right? Neil, you know all the numbers. It's instead of the usual 48, it's 96, but we weren't satisfied with 96.
We were at 192 for our master of that, and we had to dummy it down. We dummied it down for the PA that could play it, which was a good PA that we had at the Toronto Film Festival, which was 96, which is twice as much information going faster than anybody had ever heard before, and everybody noticed it right away. I mean, they all talked about it. So people know that they're missing something, and they, particularly with MP3s, they know they're missing something. But it's been so long since there's been an alternative that no one really knows what they're missing, and the discussion is boring.
Mm-hmm.
So you really have to hear the difference and go, oh, my God.
And
that's what needs to happen.
You feel the difference, too, literally.
It's about your soul. It's about the way you feel when you hear things. And, it's about the taste of food, really good food compared to super fast food.
But like the music vibrates in your body, doesn't it?
Yeah, it resonates your entire soul when it's all there.
Well, we've kind of run out of time, unfortunately, but do you think you'll be doing another film together?
I sure hope so.
Yeah, I think
I don't want to be greedy, but I hope
so. And Neil, maybe you can make a movie about Jonathan sometime.
You never know.
Yeah.
Stranger things
small
have happened.
Audience for that one.
Meanwhile, the film opens on the 29th here in New York.
Yes.
And it's been such a great pleasure talking with Neil Young and Jonathan Demme about Neil Young Journeys. Let's listen to a little more Neil Young.
Thank you, Leonard.
I feel the patience of unconditional. Strength.